Radiotopia.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
If you look to right field in any little league game, you will see a range of behaviors, some that have to do with baseball, but you might see a pirouette out there. You might see some flossing, the new crazy dance the kids are doing these days.
Over the last 5 years, Pete Morris has been coaching his two sons' Little League teams, which means he's now coached as long as an average Major League Baseball career. And all that experience has taught him there's really only three kinds of Little Leaguers.
There's 12 players on each team. You have four kids who are baseball studs. They love the game. They know how to play. They're ready to go from day one. Then you've got four kids who are great athletes, but they are spazzes. They don't care what sport they're playing. They want to tackle. They want to run. They want to chase. And then you've got four kids who have no baseball skill whatsoever. They wear their glove on the wrong hand, and they forget their hat every game.
And more often than not, it's those kids who aren't the best baseball players that actually make coaching Little League the most fun.
I see a kid playing shortstop, kind of like handing out sunflower seeds to everybody in the infield in the middle of the game just to make sure they have them. Same kid one time pulled a donut out of his pocket and was enjoying it during the game at shortstop. And he was just resting the donut in his glove and just enjoying it during the inning.
And from a youth coach's perspective, the ones you need to worry about the most are often the ones who put every ounce of emotion into the game.
There's a fine line between can't get enough of baseball and can't control my emotions if it doesn't go my way. And I think that's really the kid who is too into it. They don't know how to regulate when they get too emotionally involved in each and every play of the baseball game.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast, and I'm Neil. Today, we're finally putting the I in team.
Wait, Neil. That's not actually a good thing.
It's tales of teenagers who took sports so seriously, their journals start sounding like pep talks from Coach Taylor.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
Hi guys, my name is Allison, and I grew up in the western suburbs of Chicago.
From a very early age, Allison was convinced she had one purpose.
I had danced my entire life. I'd danced since I was 3 years old, and I'd always like identified as a dancer above anything else.
So when she became a teenager, she couldn't wait to take her passion to the next level.
I knew exactly what I wanted to be when I was in high school. A member of my high school pom squad, the Bronquettes. I had been obsessed with them since I saw them performing at halftime of my brother's football game. They were incredible, and they had the state titles to prove it. And when I got to high school, I made the team.
But making the squad wasn't enough. Allison wanted to win, and win big.
I do feel like I was probably more intense than my teammates. I don't know, I guess I thought everyone should have cared about it as much as I did.
You know Tracy Flick from Election? I was kind of the Tracy Flick of the high school competitive dance world. March 16th, 2006, my sophomore year. State. Words can't really describe it. It's what you've worked for all year. When you walk out onto that floor with your heart racing like mad and your hands sticking to the palm strands because of sweat, you know it's going to be a good performance. The moment they announce your team name as state champions, you realize that every eight-hour practice, every drop of sweat, every tear shed was finally worth it. You did it for your team, but most importantly, you did it for yourself. March 22nd, 2006. State this year was honestly amazing. We got first. We got fucking first. I was so excited. I got up and I screamed at the top of my lungs. Our assistant coach started crying. Let's just say the best things come in pairs, especially state titles. So after winning state my sophomore year, I became even more passionate about leading the team to victory as a senior. But I started to get the idea that no one on the team cared about Bronquettes as much as I did. I thought of myself as a sort of dance martyr. My next entry from my junior year. Feel the rain on your skin. No one else can feel it for you. I think that's a really good thing to believe in. The tension today was so thick, you could cut it with a knife. That phrase is so cliche, but it's so true. It is getting ridiculous. Half of this team just does not understand commitment. You're on a team, you go to practice, you do what you're supposed to do. It is not that hard of a concept. Get over yourselves, ladies. February 20th, 2007. I refuse to lose. I absolutely will not have it. Those 3 minutes on the floor can be your shining glory or your team's downfall. I will not have the latter. We have been damn near legends for so long. And as long as I'm on the team, that reputation will stick. I will not lose. I won't have it. February 28th, 2007. I'm stressed. I'm part of a dynasty. March 18th, 2007. We won one, and we lost one. Oh, we're still state champs in POM. That makes state title number 15 for this team. POM dance, however, we got third. It wasn't our best performance, and the dance in itself was a disaster from the start. I'm not upset. I remember when we lost one of the state titles feeling like my life was over. You know, when something terrible happens and you wake up the next morning and you think everything's fine and then you remember what happened. I do remember that like day after feeling of like, oh, we didn't win yesterday. That sucks. You know, you build something up so much, and especially when, you know, people know you've been winning this competition and you've been winning that competition. And then it's like, you've been winning every time, but you can't carry it through to the end. It must be exactly like losing the Super Bowl. So senior year started, and after our big loss, I set out on a quest for vengeance to win back both state titles. And I also made captain, but being captain may or may not have gotten to my head a little bit. October 4th, 2007. I am so incredibly frustrated right now. I always figured I was the only one who cared about my team, but now I know. To everyone else, it's a popularity thing. To me, it's my passion. To me, it's my life. I care about that team so fucking much, and what do I get? Nothing. there are some of us who work so hard for all of this. Not just for ourselves, but for everyone else. And we get nothing so that everyone else can be happy and get along. I am so sick of this. So for the rest of my senior year, I ruled the team with an iron fist. And then 9 days before state, some teammates and I were walking through the mall parking lot after a meal at the California Pizza Kitchen. And I slipped on a patch of ice and broke my ankle. I knew my dreams of winning state were over, and at that point in time, I felt like my life was over too. My team went on to win the state championship that year, both state titles. Yeah, and they did it without me. I guess they didn't need me as much as I thought they did. But as I watched from the stands, I started to wonder, if I wasn't a dancer anymore, who was I? July 21st, 2008. I was fidgeting at dinner, as I usually do, marking dance moves that used to be second nature to me, when my father said, "Stop doing that. You're not a dancer anymore." I'm not a dancer anymore. Since I was 3 years old, I would classify myself as a dancer first and foremost. 15 years later, and everything I used to know is over. Not by choice, but by design. A broken ankle ended it all. Dance is now my pastime, not my passion. I can no longer call myself a dancer. That stage in my life is over. I am now a writer. Thank you.
Allison Wehrma is in fact still a writer, and she shared her journals with us at Wanderlust in Los Angeles. In a moment, the story of a kid so devoted to the high school track team, he probably outran Forrest Gump. But first, this message from our friends at Nectar. As a listener of this podcast, you probably enjoy feeling a little uncomfortable now and again, which is great for a comedy podcast, but not for your bed.
Oh, nice segue.
Oh, why thank you. But it's not as nice as Nectar.
Oh, you're on fire, another one!
Nectar created a mattress so comfortable, it feels like you're sleeping on a cloud. And I know this because I actually own one.
Wait, you own a cloud?
No, a mattress. Nectar's memory foam meets your body's contours and keeps you cool all night long. And they're so confident in the comfort of their mattress, they'll give you 365 nights to try it out.
Well, that's like a whole year.
If you aren't 100% happy, they'll come to your house, pick up your mattress for free, and you'll get a full refund. They even promise a forever warranty. Mortified listeners can get $125 and two free premium pillows with any mattress order and free delivery. So why not support Mortified and take advantage of this very special offer by going to nectarsleep.com/mortified and get the best sleep of your life every night for the rest of your life. That's nectarsleep.com/mortified. This week, Mortified is also supported by RX Bar, the whole food protein bar perfect for any occasion, like breakfast on the go or a snack at the office, or as a pregame pick-me-up for your kid's Little League team. Unlike other protein bars that are filled with artificial ingredients and added sugar, RX Bars are made with whole ingredients that appear in big bold writing right on the front of the packaging, like this one intern Joey is about to eat.
So this is the mixed berry. It's got egg whites, almonds, cashews, dates, and a bunch of berries.
What's your favorite?
Definitely the blueberry. I'm a blueberry guy, what can I say?
With RX Bars, no matter which flavor you choose, you know exactly what you're putting in your body, or feeding to your children, or even your interns. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/mortified and enter promo code MORTIFIED at checkout. That's rxbar.com/mortified.
If you were to ask me what the most important thing in my life was during high school from 1975 to 1978, I wouldn't hesitate. Running.
Unlike kids on the football or soccer team, Will George didn't need some coach screaming in his ear to motivate him. He was already doing all that to himself in his mind every minute of every day.
On Saturday nights, while peers were out partying, I spent my evenings running along the streets of friendly, Fridley, Minnesota. In my junior year, I started a running streak of never missing a day. And by my senior year, I averaged 100 miles a week, training through sub-zero January temperatures and wet spring snowstorms. I documented these long-distance adventures and created writing class, a journal that was filled with pages about training, races, and the most important activity outside of running, lunch. October 24th. I've got to qualify in the top five for state. The team has to place either first or second. I've got to run super hard, the best effort of my life, no matter how much it hurts. Yup, yup, yup. When I ran on Saturday, I felt like I pulled something, but now it feels just a little sore. I hate pain, tightness, soreness, and stiff muscles. I'm just back from lunch. Boy, do I love popsicles. Yeah. October 25th. The only thing in my mind these days is regions, regions, regions. Well, it's Sloppy Joe's for lunch today. October 28th, day after regions. I qualified. I made it to state. Fantastic, my third year in a row. Well, anyways, today's another beautiful day. Yep, really high off that race. Lunchtime, 5 minutes. 5 minutes, everyone, 5 minutes. Yep, lunch, lunch, lunch. November 4th. Yes, the big, big, big race. All those miles, career miles, thousands upon thousands, all decided tomorrow. Have to rest up well and be very smart tomorrow. Just have to go over the course tonight, come home, stretch, then take a nap and then eat, put the heat pad on my legs, just relax and go to bed early tonight. Yep, all the marbles. Smart, smart, smart. Five minutes until lunch. November 7th. I placed 24th or 23rd. It's not final yet. The race to me was a giant letdown. I haven't taken my pulse for 3 days. I better do that tomorrow. Man, I'm tired.
I was so competitive that actually I was probably too competitive for my own good, in the sense that I had this long running streak going for about a year and 4 months. And I should have taken time off, of course. I mean, you know, that's what good athletes do. They give themselves the balance. And I didn't give myself the balance. Some people would sneak out of the house to drink, and I would sneak out of the house to go running. I remember one time I went for a run, and this huge storm was coming up, and the place I live, Fridley, Minnesota, was known for its tornadoes. I mean, they had major serious tornadoes that actually ripped apart the town, that kind of thing. And the sky was green and the winds were picking up. And I'm out there in the street, along comes my mother. And she's looking for me and she's like, get in the car. I'm like, no, I'm gonna finish. She's like, get in the car. So, you know, there was that tension there.
November 9th. Well, today I'm pretty keyed up. I'm feeling very, very tired. Lately, especially after I finish running. So I'm going to rest up tonight, and I'll blast one for sure. Also, I've got to keep strengthening my shins and loosen up my calves. I'm getting ready for this winter training. Tomorrow, I'll get up early and run a short 2 to 4 miler. Then maybe if I feel good, Thursday 16 or so. Yep, I'm getting back slowly but surely to my normal. Lunch was just super today. Just super. December 1st. Today, oh nuts. I really don't feel like writing much today, and I sketched a huge heart to my journal that day, and the mad crush on a girl named Nancy begins. February 6th. I'm in love with track. I'm fired up so much, it's unreal. I can't believe it. Oh well, as Nancy would say, she's the greatest. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So here's a poem, kind of a song I wrote for Nancy. To Nancy, I know someone very special. She is so special to me. She is special to me. I think she understands what I am. She knows I love to run. If only we could know each other forever. If only we could make everything stop and for us to keep going.
Well, when it came to my girlfriend Nancy at the time and running, it would always be running was first. And there were times when she'd be like, well, just couldn't you just run by the house and give me a hug? I'm like, no, I can't stop. I mean, I can barely stop for stoplights. And there were times when a date wouldn't happen because I had to go get some training in. I think she just put up with it and just believed in my running and what I did. She was incredibly patient when I think about it.
This next entry was actually a draft I wrote for my track newsletter that I composed for the track team over the winter. I was the captain. Tick, tick, tick. Only 2 weeks. Tick, tock, until the first day of track. Wednesday, March 1st. So get working. Start now. Run, 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 run. Lift. Sit-ups. Lift. Run, run, run. If you start working now, you're not going to feel good on March 1st. So train now. Get going. Win, win this spring. Let's make this team the biggest, best team ever. Yeah. Fire up. Track 78. April 8th. Yes, this boy's going to prom. Yes, he is. Oh, yeah. April 20th. I want a race. 1,500 meters. Got my tux for prom. Fire up, my double date. May 13th. Prom is great. I never had so much fun in my life. I felt really close to Nancy. It was great. She's great. We had the best time of our lives. Super. I wore a tux. Felt great. May 21st. Ran a super race yesterday, 158.8. We took first in sprint medley relay. Unreal. We got the school record. Super job. Wow, just barely passed the guy in the end. Man alive. I didn't even think I was going to get him. Great job, sprinters. All right. August 6th. Last 2 miles, I tore something in my shin. Possible stress fracture. Planned to go 12, but had to go 9.6. I limp when I walk. It hurts. August 7th. No running, just stretching. First day I've missed in 1 year and 4 months. It's very, very painful. August 18th. I'm now officially crazy, insane, mad about Nancy. I love her. She drives me crazy. I'm in love. Oh, yeah. I think about her constantly, which helps me from getting depressed about not running. Yup, she's great. She's unreal. She's the best thing that ever happened to me. Amen. August 27th. Stress fracture it is. Crack in bone and tibia. No more running for 6 weeks. No real hard training for 2 to 3 months. I'm very, very upset and depressed, but I must remain strong. I'm biking and doing exercises every day to keep my oxygen uptake. Yes, sir, that's my baby. Nancy and I are locked together in love. I tell you, we are so close, closer than close can get. Sometimes it's disgusting. But I love her. I think I always will. September 9th. Extremely depressed today because I couldn't run at the cross-country meet. Well, I got to the point where I couldn't even talk, but just sat and stared. I thought about college, classes, goals, life, running, where I'm going, and I got extremely upset.
When the injuries came on, it was extremely difficult. I mean, you talk about a dark cloud. You would not want to know me when I could not run, let me tell you. And I tried many things. But in the end, my body was just not suited for that long distance type running. I did eventually clean out my closet of all my track shoes, and my family was having a garage sale. So I took them downstairs and I put them on the table and I said, I'm done. To lose that ability physically, it affected me emotionally and mentally. And then it affected me as far as who I was. I mean, if I can't win races, what's my purpose? Who am I?
November 19th. My leg is tight like a rubber band, burning, writhing, a part of me. If I could just turn it off, leave it, or change it, I would, but I can't. Was it worth it? The miles upon miles, records, state, glory, medals? No. But the feeling I got out of running, the power of movement, the fleeing of all my frustrations and worries, that was worth it. The feeling of being... The feeling of being invincible, worth it, conquering everything. Self-confidence that was given through running that I desperately needed, badly. For my self-image then was shot, and thank you to running, I became strong. Worth it.
Striving to be your best is a good motivational tool. I think it's just a matter of knowing when to let go. Adolescents don't often know when to step back and examine whether they're going too far. So there can be a danger zone, but overall, it's a good motivator. And I think a lot of kids choose not to be passionate about something. And I feel sad for them. Because I want kids to find that one thing that gives them that spark, and to nourish that and see where it takes them.
That was Will at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. And you'll be happy to know that all those days and nights he spent running through the wilderness of Minnesota did leave an impact on Will. Today, he teaches kids all about the wonders of the great outdoors as a park ranger. As always, all the childhood writings were shared with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. And this concludes our look back at kids who strove to be number one, where we learned, no matter how great you think you are, there will always be something right around the corner that seems so much better.
5 minutes, everyone. 5 minutes. Yep. Lunch, lunch, lunch.
To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit getmortified.com to learn about upcoming Mortified live events, our TV series on Netflix called The Mortified Guide, and much, much more. And while you're there, you can order My Mortified Life, the official diary of this series, loaded with writing prompts that celebrate your awkward teenage past. The Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. And if your company would like to support our podcast, email sponsor at radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Hadley Dion, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Ketcher. Stories were produced for the stage by Susan Denny. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snake, Snake, Snakes. Special thanks to our Little League expert, Pete Morris, whose own Mortified performance can be seen in the Growing Up Gay episode of The Mortified Guide on Netflix. Thanks to our very own Blueberry Guy, our intern Joey Fishground. Also a big thanks to all the dedicated Mortified live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived crushing defeat.